This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Here's something that should bother you about the Brendan Banfield case, otherwise known as the Au Pair Affair murder. I mean, it looks pretty salacious and juicy, and many would think, oh, this is a slam dunk right out of the gate, right? Well, as we like to do here, we like to look at things from all sides, and, you know, sometimes things may surprise you. So let's talk about the defense in this case. Let's talk about some of the goings on around the evidence, around what has been found, what is wanting to be omitted from this case, what people are talking about, what they're not talking about, why they're not talking about it. Let's just look at reality on reality's terms, shall we? Here's something that should bother you about the Brendan Banfield case, regardless of what you think happened in that Herndon bedroom in February of 2023. The Fairfax County Police Department's own digital forensic expert, a guy named Brendan Miller, who analyzed 60 devices connected to this investigation, that's a lot of devices, 60, concluded that the prosecution's entire theory was wrong. He didn't hedge. He didn't say inconclusive. He wrote an executive summary stating that Christine Banfield, the victim, appeared to be the one using that FetLife account. The one prosecutors say her husband created to catch Joseph Ryan and lure him to his death. Miller's findings were peer-reviewed by the University of Alabama. They confirmed his conclusions. And for that work, Deputy Chief Patrick Brush reportedly told Miller he would never do another digital forensics case in the Major Crimes Bureau again. Kind of weird. Kind of harsh. You do your job. You get to your conclusion. The conclusion doesn't necessarily go along the narrative of what the department and the investigators have been wanting or saying or suspecting. And rather than being like, oh, shit, I didn't see that coming. Wow, good job. Thanks for finding this. We would have never have known otherwise. It's, shut up! We don't want to hear this. La, 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 you'll never work again. Or something along those lines. Miller was transferred out of digital forensics by late 2024. The lead homicide detective, Kyle Bryant, testified under defense questioning that he faced pressure from higher ups regarding the theory of the case. He said he followed what he believed the evidence showed, which is what you should do. Bryant was also moved off the homicide team. When narratives don't go a certain way and you get removed, we've seen that before. See, in the past, police departments were able to do this sort of thing without anybody really noticing or watching, or local media maybe not reporting on it because they want to keep that tight relationship there. So when they need to get information, they'll get it. And if you just look the other way on this and don't report on it, it's kind of, you know, a quid pro quo thing that has existed silently with local media outlets for pretty much ever with local police departments, depending on what kind of relationship they have. It's good to have a semi-decent one with the local police if you're local reporters. It just is. But it doesn't work very well when you have a department that is apparently not wanting to look at reality on reality's terms, deal with it, report on it, and introduce it into a case. So, they weren't relying on us. They weren't relying or expecting other folks like us, the thousands of us out there who don't really give a shit about our relationships with said local police department. We're just going to report and talk about what the facts say. So you can't really pull this charade anymore because you're going to get your ass called out for it. So that's exactly what we're doing. And this, again, this is a murder case. Anyone denying evidence, ignoring evidence, excluding evidence because it fits their narrative only hurts the ultimate goal of getting justice for the victims here. It's people making it more about their ego and their direction they think a case should go than actually getting to the damn truth. There should be no ego involved in a case like this. It's simply where does reality, where do the facts take us? This is some interesting stuff. Not saying that these two are innocent, but I'm saying this is some interesting stuff. Defense Attorney John Carroll put it bluntly in court, it is a theory in search of facts rather than a series of facts supporting a theory. It's a hell of an accusation, and Judge Penny Askerit found Miller's transfer concerning enough to order prosecutors to hand over all communications relating to his reassignment. She said on the record, the transfer that gives the court pause is Miller's because it relates to the theory of the case. So let's talk about that theory, because if you're going to understand exactly what the defense is working with here, you need to understand what they're fighting against and where it falls apart. The prosecution's narrative goes like this. Brennan Banfield, an IRS special agent, was allegedly having an affair with the family's Brazilian au pair, Juliana Perez Mangalas. I think I'm saying her name probably incorrectly. Rather than get a divorce, he allegedly decided to kill his wife, Christine, and frame a stranger for her murder. According to prosecutors, Brendan and Juliana created a fake profile on FetLife, a website for people into kink and BDSM, pretending to be Christine. They allegedly found a guy named Joseph Ryan, a 39-year-old from Springfield, who thought he was arranging a consensual encounter involving a SA fantasy. Ryan showed up to the house on the morning of February 24th, 2023, believing Christine wanted him there. Instead, prosecutors say he walked into a trap. The alleged plan was for Ryan to restrain Christine, at which point Brendan and Juliana would burst in, shoot Ryan, and claim they'd interrupted a home invasion. Christine would be dead, Ryan would be dead, and Brendan would walk away looking like a hero who tried to save his wife. Then forever he can go sleep with the au pair and life is going to be good. You just happened to be here. We fell in love. It's like when Harry met Sally. It's an elaborate theory. Prosecutors have called it a calculated months-long conspiracy. They say Brendan allegedly even installed soundproof windows and tested whether screams could be heard from outside the house. But here's the problem. The guy who actually examined the digital evidence, the phones, the laptops, the account logins, all 60 devices, you know, the guy that they're going to call in court usually at some point to go tell us, what did you find on those devices? Came to a completely different conclusion. According to Officer Brendan Miller's executive summary, there is no indication that Christine lost control of her devices during this time. He noted that Christine had a pattern of being active on her devices during the relevant times over the year leading up to this period. He found that FetLife account was created using Christine's phone. A new photo of her, one she texted to her husband, was used for the profile. And here's the part that really complicates the prosecution's theory. Miller wrote that Joe is not the only person Christine was making plans with on FetLife, or who received her Telegram username. According to Miller's analysis, Christine wasn't just communicating with Joseph Ryan on that site. She appeared to be communicating with multiple people. She was giving out her encrypted Telegram handle. And critically, Miller found that Brendan's Samsung devices did not appear on any legal process returns as hardware profile associated with these accounts. In plain English, according to the department's own forensic examiner, the phones and computers tied to that FetLife account point to Christine, not Brendan. Now, does that mean Christine orchestrated her own death? Of course not. But it raises a question the prosecution has to answer, and so far hasn't. If Brendan was catfishing Ryan, where's the digital trail proving it? Because the department's own expert couldn't find one. And when that expert said so, they moved him out of the unit. They didn't go, can you dig more? Can you find out more? Can you back this up with anything else? Just go away. Go away. We don't like what you have to say. It doesn't go with what we want. Go away. Remember that in Delphi? Deputy Chief Brush, the guy who oversaw major crimes at the time, testified that he disagreed with Miller's summary. He said the data was incorrectly and inappropriately being analyzed. Maybe it was. Bresch acknowledged involvement in Miller's transfer. He claimed it wasn't punitive. Then, according to a subsequent court filing from the defense, Bresch retired from the department after the hearing in which he testified. Kyle Bryant, the lead detective, testified he followed what he believed the evidence showed when Carroll asked him in court whether he'd ever been confronted by command staff about disagreeing with the theory of the case. The implication was clear. Bryant was transferred too. Here's what the prosecutor said when asked about the competing theories within the department. With 12 different homicide detectives, there were 24 different theories. The theory only narrowed to one. Deputy Commonwealth's Attorney Eric Klinghan admitted after the off-air provided her account to prosecutors. So let's let that sit for a second. The prosecution is acknowledging that their case did not crystallize around the catfishing narrative until Juliana Perez, the au pair, decided to cooperate, which she'd have every incentive in the world to do, even if it means making shit up and going along with a story that makes her look less bad. Which brings us to the biggest problem the defense has to exploit, their star witness. Juliana Perez Mangalas is the linchpin of this prosecution. Without her testimony, all they have is circumstantial evidence and a digital forensic report that contradicts their theory and her story. With her, they have a detailed account of Brendan allegedly masterminding the entire plot. They say he told her he wanted to get rid of Christine rather than divorce her. She says they testified the soundproof windows, so they tested the soundproof windows together. She says she took the Banfield's daughter to the car that morning as Ryan pulled into the driveway, then called Brendan, who was supposedly stalked out at a, or staked out at a nearby McDonald's waiting for the bat signal to be called. It's a vivid, damning account. It also came after she spent nearly a year facing second-degree murder charges, looking at serious prison time, and staring down the possibility of never being or seeing her family in Brazil ever again. Might be some incentive to go along with somebody's theory if it means you're going to get away, even if it means it's not reality. Her original story was completely different. On the day of the killings, both she and Brendan told police the same thing. They came home, found Ryan attacking Christine with a knife and shot him. In her body cam interview that day, footage that's now been released, she gave an account that doesn't match what she later told prosecutors. She was panicked, hyperventilating, saying her friend was hurt. Then nearly a year later, after Brendan was finally arrested, everything changed. Within days of his indictment, Juliana took a plea deal. Second-degree murder, dropped to manslaughter, potential sentence up to 10 years. What the prosecution is actually recommending, time served, followed by deportation to Brazil. And her sentencing was deliberately scheduled after Brendan's trial. Prosecutors asked for that specifically. The court record shows to ensure she continues to cooperate, meaning make sure she keeps telling the same story. And if true, great. If not, well, we have a problem. She wrote a letter to her mother from the Fairfax County Jail, and it's been entered into evidence. "I'm just so upset and heartbroken for doing this to Brendan," she wrote. "I love him, and he loves me too. I have no doubts, but it's the right thing to do for you. I want to be with you again." Huh. She wants to go see her family again. That's not crazy. And if you can go off to another part of the world and say bye-bye to all of this and essentially forget about it, people can be cruel. People can be heartless. People are going to look out for their own best interests pretty much 99% of the time. And she appears to be looking out for her best interest. Whether that's for the right reason or not, that's the part we're trying to figure out. She's not saying she's telling the truth because it's the truth. She's saying she's doing this to go home. Defense attorneys have already telegraphed their strategy. Juliana Perez has every incentive to fabricate, every reason to say what the prosecution wants her to say. Her freedom depends on Brendan Banfield's conviction. That's not a neutral witness. That's a cooperator with her entire future riding on the outcome. And the prosecution knows their case's vulnerabilities beyond her credibility. They tried to introduce a forensic interview with Brendan's 4-year-old daughter, conducted the day of the killings. The child was in the basement when everything happened. Prosecutors argued her statement should be admissible because she was a victim of her father's alleged crimes. The judge disagreed. She ruled the interview inadmissible because the child wasn't being directly victimized, as required by Virginia statute. The child abuse charges, prosecutors later added, weren't the basis for that original interview. And the judge saw through the attempt to basically redo them and retrofit them. The defense also moved to rescind Banfield's indictment entirely and remove lead prosecutor Eric Klingham from the case, arguing that Klingham had improperly guided the au pair during her proffer interview. The judge denied both motions, but the arguments are on the record. Carol is building a narrative of a prosecutorial overreach and an investigation that locked onto a theory before the evidence actually supported it. And the timeline raises its own questions. Christine Banfield and Joseph Ryan were killed on February 24th, 23. The initial story from both Brendan and Juliana was consistent. Home invasion, self-defense. It took 8 months to arrest the au pair. It took 18 months to charge Brendan. Why? If the catfishing theory was solid from the start, if the evidence pointed clearly to an elaborate murder conspiracy, why did it take a year and a half to indict him? Why did they need Juliana to flip first? The answer the defense will offer is simple. Because the evidence didn't support the theory. They needed someone to tell the story for them. Now, let's be honest about what the defense can't explain away, because this isn't a one-sided case, and pretending otherwise would be intellectually dishonest. There was a framed photo of Brendan and Juliana on the master bedroom nightstand. Police photographed it the day of the killings. That's not ambiguous. The affair isn't disputed. Both sides acknowledged it happened. Juliana's account includes specific details that would be difficult to fabricate entirely. The alleged soundproof window test, the conversations she claimed that they had about wanting Christine gone, the coordinated timeline and the timing she describes from the morning of the murders. And then there's the shooting itself. Joseph Ryan was shot twice by two different guns. Both Brendan and Juliana pulled triggers that morning. That's not disputed either. If this was a genuinely a panicked response to a home invasion, why did both of them fire? Why did Juliana, by her own admission, go retrieve a second gun from a bathroom safe, a safe which Brendan allegedly gave her the combination, and shoot Ryan again after he'd already been hit? There's also a question the defense has to answer about Christine's supposed secret life. If she really was the one arranging this encounter, if she genuinely invited Joseph Ryan to her home for a consensual fantasy scenario, where is the evidence that she knew he was coming that morning? Miller's digital forensics analysis shows she was active on FetLife and communicating with multiple people, but there is a message, a calendar entry, or is there a calendar entry, anything showing she expected Ryan to show up on February 24th while her husband was supposedly at work and her daughter was supposedly going to the zoo with the au pair? There's a gap. The prosecution will argue that gap exists because Brendan and Juliana were the ones who scheduled Ryan's visits using Christine's identity. The defense will argue the gap exists because the investigation didn't look hard enough at Christine's own activity once command staff decided on the catfishing theory. This is what the jury has to sort through. Two competing versions of a horrific morning. In one, a man and his lover allegedly executed a calculated murder plot using a sex website to recruit an unwitting stranger as a scapegoat. They killed two people and tried to walk away clean. In the other version, according to the defense, a wife's secret sexual life brought a dangerous stranger into their home. Something went horribly wrong, and two people walked in on a nightmare and acted in genuine terror. The prosecution's own digital forensic expert said the evidence points to the second version. He wrote it in a report. It was peer-reviewed and confirmed, and then he was told he'd never work another case in that bureau. A little weird. The prosecution's star witness is a woman who changed her story after a year of facing murder charges, who was being promised freedom and a ticket home in exchange for her testimony, who wrote to her mother that she was heartbroken to be doing this to a man she still loves. The lead detective testified under defense questioning about pressure he faced regarding the theory of the case. He was transferred to. The judge has already excluded key evidence the prosecution wanted. She's already ordered prosecutors to hand over communications about the forensic expert's reassignment. She's already noted on the record that the transfer gives her pause. The trial, originally scheduled for February 25, then pushed to October 25, has been delayed again and again after the defense requested more time to review evidence. When it finally happens, which is supposed to be happening in the coming weeks, which we will carry for you, this is what the jury will face. Brennan Banfield may be guilty. He may have orchestrated exactly what prosecutors say he did. Juries convict on cooperator testimony all the time. And Juliana's account, if believed, is damning. But the defense is something prosecutors rarely hand them. The state's own experts on the record saying the evidence doesn't support the state's theory. That's not reasonable doubt manufactured by a clever lawyer. That's reasonable doubt created by the investigation itself. Juliana Perez will take the stand, her freedom hanging on every word. The digital forensics will be argued and re-argued, and somewhere in that courtroom, 12 people will have to decide whether the story that sent two detectives out of their units is the story they believe, or whether the woman who flipped to go home is the one telling the truth. Christine Banfield is dead. Joseph Ryan is dead. Somebody is responsible. The question is whether the people building the case found the right answer or just the most convenient one. Brennan Banfield has pled not guilty and maintains his innocence. All individuals are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. We'll be following this case for you. Follow it with us by pressing subscribe right now, whatever platform it is you're listening to us or watching us on. We can continue this conversation off the air in the comments section on YouTube and on our Substack page. If you want to interact directly with me, please do check out our Substack. The link is in the descriptions. You can go to hiddenkillers.substack.com and join us. Right now it is free. Yes, it is free. All of our articles, they're going up, and videos going up there first, day before they go anywhere else. So if you want to get in on our videos and our conversation before everybody else, please do check out our Substack and join us in the conversation off the air over there. And like I said, please do press subscribe wherever it is you're listening to us or watching us. We do greatly appreciate that. If you have a moment and you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, a quick review on Apple Podcasts would be wonderful. It signals to other folks that you like the content, and then it lets them know about us as well. So if you have a moment, Apple Podcast, a quick review. Thank you in advance for that. All right. Looking forward to continuing this conversation off the air in the comments. Until then, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.